Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of December, recording at 8 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week, most of which I've been away, as you may realize. Now, first, this week, stock markets have been generally steady. And within that performance, we've seen a rebound by the Japanese stock market on weakness of the yen, something that's often been mentioned on Fuller Money as a prerequisite. Today, that stock market action stayed mostly steady. There was a little profit taking in some of the Asian markets. Wall Street today opened and firm, made just a nudge to a new high on the S&P and the Dow, but then it sort of fell back as the day developed. The news on the day was less bad unemployment figures than people had been expecting. That created some more drama elsewhere, as we'll see in a moment, or as I'll mention in a moment. Now, long-dated government bond prices this week, they had been quite firm in recent weeks, but they eased this week and gave up gains fairly sharply in the instances of the U.S. Treasuries. Now, the big drama in here this week, and it's pretty well all come today, but Owen had commented, and we both commented recently about some loss of overall downward momentum for the U.S. dollar as it pulled back to the top of its 2008 trading range. And today we saw sharp upward dynamics by the U.S. dollar, again on that employment news, and that has pushed, for instance, the euro has fallen back, I'll do it that way, to 148.34 against the dollar. And the pound, for instance, if I can just find that on my screen, has pulled back to 164.32. It's mainly the Europeans. I think they've seen the biggest moves, although, again, the Australian dollar has pulled back to 91.14. But strong day in the U.S. dollar, and that's taken the U.S. dollar index up over a full point. So it's put it up to 75.9. And what else? Precious metals. Big action here. Quite a sharp reaction. And that is, in percentage terms, it's probably biggest in gold. Currently down $57 as I speak, and that's taken gold back to $1,150. Silver is currently down 68 cents to 1844. Platinum down $53 to $14.40. So that's some clear downward dynamics here in the golds. Crude oil has had a quiet, and that was, of course, after firmness. I hadn't mentioned earlier in the week that we'd had additional firmness with platinum, silver, and gold all pushing to new highs within their overall upward trends. Crude oil has been soft this week, and again today it's at 75.61. And the agricultural commodities a bit mixed overall. Okay, so what's going on? What's the big theme in here overall? Well, first on stock markets, let's have a little review of the technical action, which you can see on the charts, of course. And that is that very good rallies, spectacular rallies, some would say, that we have seen this year, and indeed I'll describe them as spectacular rallies as well, have lost upside momentum in recent weeks. And that's part of the corrective process that Owen and I have been talking about almost daily for the last few weeks. And a corrective process, the extent to which, certainly for the major stock markets and the leaders, we feel is limited to a reversion towards the trend mean. And by that I mean the rising 200-day moving averages. We use the 200-day moving average to indicate the trend mean, as it's a medium-term trend smoothing device. Okay, so within that framework, we have had most of the OECD stock markets remaining quite steady. The big exception had been Japan, and Japan had really underperformed, actually broke beneath its gradually rising 200-day moving average on the Japanese indices, although I suspect that's been, well, I know that's been reversed, or they've rallied back up to the MA, or possibly even back up above it in the last couple of days. Helped by that very weak yen. If you've been listening to the audios and reading Comment of the Day regularly, you'll know that we've often mentioned that the missing ingredient here for Japan, or the much-needed ingredient as far as the stock market rally was concerned, was a softer currency. And the Japanese have done some extensive jawboning in here over the last week, and it's been successful in triggering a weaker Japanese currency. Now, going back to stock markets, but what I will say in this big picture, long term outlook, I'm still a bit wary of Japan, an export dependent nation with demographic problems, and in a very, very competitive field, still at a disadvantage in terms of foreign exchange rates. Remember, its biggest competitor is certainly China, and China, with its renminbi pegged to the U.S. dollar, has been very firm against the yen. So Japan needs to reverse that, and I suspect, having moved down this path, that they will persist with it for a while longer. We'll see. Now, in terms of global stock markets, the two most influential markets by far, as I'm sure you realize, and veteran subscribers certainly do, are Wall Street. We have talked for decades about the Wall Street leash effect. In other words, if Wall Street is, think of it in terms of a dog walker, we're new subscribers. And what I mean by that is that if Wall Street is steady, let alone moving higher, that extends the leash, allowing some of the thinner and punchier stock markets, by punchier I mean with perhaps better growth rates, to outperform on the upside. Now, conversely, when Wall Street is in retreat, that retracts the leash, and those high beta markets will fall even faster than Wall Street. Now, there's also a China leash effect, which we've been talking about in the last couple of years. As China's stock market grows in importance, and that certainly has regional influence, and it can extend beyond the region. Now, both Wall Street and China have been quite steady recently, although Wall Street is more overextended of the two relative to its 200-day moving average. Most of these stock markets, not China, which has been moving upwards. China saw its mean reversion correction early on and has quite a bit of support underneath it at this stage. But Wall Street and the European stock markets and a lot of the leading emerging markets are still looking overextended relative to their rising 200-day moving averages. Again, they're mostly very steady, but they have lost upside momentum to some degree. And if you look at the daily charts, you'll see particularly clearly the progression of higher reaction lows. They all show those progressions of higher reaction lows. Now, as long as those aren't broken, then we are unlikely to see a fright in the individual markets. But having lost upside momentum, there is some risk over the short term that we do see breaches of those higher reaction lows. For instance, if you take out the most recent reaction low, that for more than a day or two, that can become self-filling for a while as some of the more active managers pull money out of the market. I maintain, as we have all along, that the downside risk, as I say, is limited to mean reversion towards those 200-day moving averages. In terms of the longer picture, both medium term and beyond, and for us, medium term is anything from a few months to a couple of years, we think the outlook is still quite favorable. The main factor, which trumps most other influences more often than not, is monetary policy, and this remains extremely accommodative. And yes, a few countries have nudged interest rates up a little bit. Some countries are saying that the most extreme aspects of or provisions for quantitative easing are no longer needed. But let's not kid ourselves. This is still very accommodative monetary policy. Interest rates, short-term interest rates remain very low. Long-term interest rates remain very low with the help of the quantitative easing, and that's a good environment for stock markets. Also, there's been a lot of worry about stock markets, largely coming from the people who I think are looking at the wrong factors. The people who are saying banks aren't lending, there's too much debt around, GDP growth is too weak. Well, they're absolutely right about all that, but it tends to be irrelevant in the earlier stages of bull markets because the stock market is a discounting mechanism. It's a lead indicator, and stock markets bottom out anything from 1 to 12 months before economies bottom out. And you've seen that before in earlier cycles, and we've seen it again in this one. So what I think people should have been looking at really is the aggressive asset reflation efforts that were coming from the central banks. The fact that we had had panicky market conditions on the downside, a selling climax, and as we've said over and over and over again, that the climactic action marked the beginning of the end of the bear market, and the beginning of the end of the bear market is also the beginning of the base building process for the new bull market, which is not all that long in the tooth. So depending on what happens with interest rates, I think the environment is really still reasonably attractive over the medium term. Now, when I say reasonably attractive, I don't expect gains of the sort that we saw from March to June and from mid-July to September or even to now, but partly because there was massive short covering in there, a lot of cash on the sidelines, moving back in one-way traffic for stock markets. And the low-hanging fruit has been removed. It's been plucked. And people are sitting around and waiting to see what's going to happen with the earnings. But my feeling is that the quantitative easing has done enough to stimulate GDP growth. We're seeing that in the figures. So it's not just my feeling. We're seeing evidence of that. And I think that will continue, and that will improve earnings, and earnings will improve more than GDP growth because, well, growth will be moderate, and that's not no problems really with that because that doesn't put pressure, you know, strong growth, really strong growth, puts pressure on the central banks to tighten monetary conditions. Moderate growth, on the other hand, does not. So that's not a bad environment overall, and corporations had gone into survival mode last year and slashed overheads, become more efficient, as evidenced by the productivity increase data that we've seen. And of course, the brutal way they achieve that most quickly is by letting staff go. So overheads have come down. Unemployment has gone up, which is a big concern for governments. I believe I'm right in saying, I wouldn't stake my life on this, but I think I'm right in saying that the Fed has never increased interest rates while unemployment was still rising. So again, unemployment is still rising, although its rate of increase slowed in here today. More jobs were created. But the bottom line is that the U.S. has to create about 150,000 jobs a month just to tread water in terms of unemployment. And anything less than the creation of approximately 150,000 jobs a month will mean rising unemployment. So the people who say that the Fed's unlikely to hike rates until well into 2010, and possibly not at all during 2010, are probably right. And that means that stock markets will face a benign environment in terms of monetary policy for quite some time. And again, as I said earlier in this broadcast, and have said on a number of occasions, monetary policy trumps most other factors most of the time. We saw a bit of resilience in stock markets in the way they were able to shake off the Dubai fears. So I think it would take some sort of geopolitical event or a major black swan here to seriously derail the overall stock market cyclical bull environment. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of problems around. Debt problems, unemployment problems, those are the slow growth problems, but mainly it's debt. Banks are hoarding capital, reluctant to lend, at least in the OECD economies. There are still lots of derivatives out there that are unaccounted for or still off balance sheet, that people are rightly concerned about. But these are not unknown problems. And what, again, I think is more important is the monetary policy and the fact that we seem to be on track for some relatively low inflation GDP growth. Now, at some point, though, those canaries in the coal mine that I've often mentioned, and to touch on those long-dated government bond yields, at some stage, those long-dated government bond yields are going to start to rise. Now, certainly, there will be upward pressure, I feel, when the quantitative easing is halted. Now, how high they go, well, the charts will show us, but when, for instance, we see the 10-year U.S. Treasury yields, and they are probably around 3.37 right now. They might have edged up a little bit here today, but this morning they were at that level, 3.37 yield. When that moves up above 4% and holds it, that's going to start to ring some small alarm bells. And when it moves up above 5%, that's going to ring a lot of alarm bells, at least over at Fuller Money. Now, I don't know whether that's going to happen towards the back end of next year or much later. And neither does anyone else. But it is almost certainly going to happen at some stage in response to all this quantitative easing. And if you've read Milton Friedman, and I suspect many of you have, his point is that the type of, I don't think he even envisaged the type of global monetary reflation that we've seen in recent years, that does eventually lead to inflationary pressures. It's not a near-term problem, as I emphasize, but it's likely to be, if not a medium-term problem, a longer-term problem. And we have to watch out for that. So that's one canary in the coal mine. The other one's the U.S. dollar. A rally in the U.S. dollar is not a problem for global stock markets. They may well heave a sigh of relief. But if we were to see the dollar go into free fall, that's not something that Fuller Money has forecast, incidentally, but plenty of people have forecast it. But if the dollar did go into free fall, that would, well, that canary in our opinion would be belly up, and that would be a problem for global stock markets. So those two canaries are happily chirping away. The third one, which is also happily chirping away, is monitoring crude oil. And a crude oil price at $75.66 as I speak is not a problem for the global economy. If that starts to get up into the mid-80s and hold it and extend those gains, then I will start to fret about it, and I suspect other people will as well. And crude oil approaching the $90-$100 level will definitely become a headwind for the global economy. Now, it does depend a little bit on how strong the global economy actually is at the time, and I assume that it would be stronger when that actually happens, because the higher prices would suggest an increase in demand for oil. But right now, what have we got? We have oil, which is in an overall upward trend, but it's a very rangy upward trend, and it's not a problem, not a headwind here for stock markets at this stage. So the overall environment remains benign. Therefore, we still feel that if we get pullbacks towards the rising 200-day moving averages for whatever reason other than some horrendous geopolitical shock that nobody's forecasting at this time, short of that, we think that pullbacks are buying opportunities in stock markets. We still like the Fuller Money themes. Most of all, Asian emerging markets, the resources producers of South America, led by Brazil, developed country resources producers, that's Australia, Canada. These look very attractive to us. We also like information technology a lot, and we like it on a global basis. So those are the main Fuller Money themes, and they lead into, or it's global infrastructure demand is one of the drivers behind those themes, certainly the resources theme. And that's where I have concentrated my funds personally. What else? What else out there? What about the corporate bonds? Well, again, the low-hanging fruit has been plucked. But yields are still among some of the best available to investors. And with economic growth favoring additional recovery, or with the current trajectory of economic activity favoring further recovery, and with monetary policy is certainly designed to assist further economic recovery, I think that those who are holding those corporate bonds are likely to do okay. I don't think I'd go out into the radical high risk bonds. Well, that's for bond specialists anyway. And the people who are going to be doing that know a whole lot more about bonds and corporate bonds than I do. But for most investors who are just looking for some income and have corporate bond funds, I don't think there's any major worry there, just as I don't feel there's any major worry in stock markets. For both those corporate bonds and for stock markets, setbacks in the prices of those instruments, I feel, are buying opportunities still. So again, I emphasize that a wall of worry aside, and that's a contrary indicator, so a net positive, that this remains a benign environment for stock markets. So following this corrective phase that we're in right now, we do look for higher levels. And this bull market should run, this cyclical bull market should run well into 2010, and it may run well beyond that. We just have to see. It'll depend on events that will influence central banks, not least the price of crude oil and other commodities. Now, what about gold and silver and platinum and the industrial metals led by copper? Well, improving global GDP growth should be favorable, but the dollar is a big player in here in terms of what those do. Now, the dollar, I mentioned the dollar's big upward dynamics here today, and that may lead to some further short covering in the US dollar, but is it the beginning of a major run on the upside for the dollar? Well, it's not impossible because the dollar is quite low, as is sterling, relative to other currencies. But at this stage, I would be surprised if we saw a major recovery in the dollar occur. One, it hasn't gone through enough support building in the lower recesses of its ranges, in my opinion. I don't see a strong catalyst for that. For instance, you go back to 2008, we had a March to July base, and we did see a very clear breakout of that base, and then we had the financial crisis and the bear market, which caused a lot of money to flow into the very liquid US dollar and into highly liquid US dollar assets such as treasuries. Now, I don't think we have an environment conducive for that sort of move, but a technical rally, that's no surprise. And if it's just a technical rally, then it will create another good buying opportunity in the precious metals and in the industrial metals as well, and quite possibly in a number of the agricultural commodities as well. Gold has done so well since that breakout when it began to move above 1,000, getting up to 1,200, over 1,200. So we saw an advance of better than 20%. It's hardly surprising that we're now seeing a bit more volatility here in what I think is a consolidation at a time that does remain, I think, quite favorable for gold overall. So again, watch the higher reaction lows. Well, gold would have to pull back an awfully long way to break those. I don't expect that. And I think we will see higher levels in these precious metals, and I think we will in time in the industrial commodities, although hopefully not too quickly in terms of crude oil prices. I'm going to have a quick cough here and then finish off. Excuse me. In terms of crude oil, one of the reasons why it's lagging is, of course, that the recession reduced demand. Actually, the spike up to $147 really did choke off demand quite sharply, as we've seen following other spikes in the price of crude oil going right back into the 1970s, and I remember them well. Now, we've also had some leakage in terms of OPEC oil production, in other words, producing more than allocations. And we've also got the non-OPEC oil production. But there's a new kid on the block, or several new kids on the block, and I would label them alternative sources of energy. One of them that's not so new is natural gas, but what is new about natural gas is that technology has cracked, literally and figuratively, the problem of how to get natural gas out of rock formations. And therefore, we're seeing this surplus of natural gas in the United States, and this technology is now being used in Europe. And there are large gas deposits, interestingly, France has some of the biggest, which, and I think Sweden has quite substantial deposits, or is it Denmark? I'm not sure which one. Maybe a subscriber will correct me on that, or point out which one. Of this shale natural gas, and that is buying time in terms of peak oil, which Owen and I have always defined in terms of the cost of production. New kids on the block, though, we've got more solar, we've got more wind, we've got more biofuel. Particularly in Brazil. So all of that is making inroads into a demand for crude oil, and it will continue to do so because these programs, and nuclear, of course, not a new kid on the block, but and a slow one in terms of jump-starting increases, but there are a lot of nuclear power stations under development, not least in China. So this is all taking market share, both now and increasingly in future, away from oil. So at the risk of sounding Pollyanna-ish towards the end of this broadcast, there is a chance that we might just be clever enough as a species to bring this technology on quickly enough, and we might prioritize sufficiently, although these moves are always very controversial, to subsidize sufficiently to encourage these alternative sources of energy, that we actually avoid the kind of nightmarish turn all the lights out energy crunch that people have been forecasting for a good many years. Now, that's conjecture on my part, and it requires a bit of luck and lots more funding and development and time, but it's a possibility. And the world will be much, much better off, I can assure you, not that it isn't an obvious point, if we don't get another massive spike in the price of crude oil anytime soon, because that's the big one. That's what causes recessions, and severe recessions, more readily and more predictably than any other known factor. And on that note, I say, hopefully that event is long delayed, and there's a chance that will be the case. So, On that concluding note, I wish you all a splendid weekend, and we'll look forward to an interesting week commencing on Monday. All the